wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zef.
And I'm Eric.
Down in New Basement Studios by the lake. This is part two of the 2019 Christmas extravaganza. I thought hard about maybe using a different word.
It's now an extravaganza. Just based on the first part, we know it's going to be an extravaganza.
Can I say, I've actually, every time we do a Christmas show, I always commit and I wear my Christmas sweater that I was once given. So I want to give a shout out to Shannon out there who gave this to me. I still wear this once a year.
Yeah, for the Christmas show. The lights aren't running.
No, the lead's all broke, and I didn't want to try and fix it and then set myself on fire or who knows what. Because I'm sure people die in this. Somebody dies every year in some sort of cheap Christmas clothing. Mm-hmm. I'm adamant it's not going to be me,
or at least not on the air.
Yeah, it's not on the air. So anyway, we are doing our big fella movie Christmas. If you didn't listen to part one, then go back and listen to part one because it saves me explaining what we're doing in part two.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Have an interview with a guest, and also we talked about a couple of packages of movies, food and drink, and
throwing
songs,
in some music and stuff
so that's
to get you through the Christmas season.
Right.
All right, so on to, and again, I think anyone listening to part one will know, and if you haven't listened to part one and for some reason are going to do part two first, Eric has been quite traditional in his selections, although he is taking a oblique look at traditional Christmas movies. Mm-hmm. I am taking an oblique look at movies and desperately attempting to tie them legitimately to the Christmas season.
Right. I'm waiting for some bit of actual Christmas to show up in your things, but that's okay.
Oh, they will. They will in this movie. They're not in this movie, but in the last of my movies. So my second movie in my package, I'm going to explain, before I say what this movie is, I'm going to explain why, the whole notion of why I select things. When I was a kid growing up in England, growing up in England, we had three TV stations. We had a fourth in the 80s. That was all you had. And this was before the ages of VCRs and all this sort of thing. So the Christmas season, that's when you watched TV. And it was a big deal in early December where the company said, these are the shows that we're going to have this Christmas season while you're stuck in the house. Because in England, you know, it's not just like Christmas Day when everything's shut.
Oh, yeah.
Things shut early on Christmas Eve. Oh, not everything opens the next day. Most businesses, to be fair, shut down for 5 to 10 business days. So the Christmas vacation.
They did.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, now they're shut down by a very right-wing government. But that's another thing entirely. So anyway, so there would be all kinds of Christmas episodes and Christmas specials. And obviously, when you were a kid, you saw films in the cinema, but then you didn't see them again until they were on TV. And generations now have no idea. They just, it's what's on Apple, what's on Netflix.
Watching them.
You know, so growing up, and my partner and I both live in determinate middle age, we are still of a generation that grew up like, if you missed it when it was in the cinema, the only other time to see it was when it came on TV.
Well, plus a lot of those movies that ended up on TV repeatedly, which is how you end up thinking that these are holiday movies, even though they aren't.
So I remember, I mean, I'm not going to lie, the first time I saw The Magnificent Seven was on TV at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
First time I saw Bridge Over the River Kwai was on TV on Christmas. The one channel that owned the rights to the James Bond movies would always play one James Bond movie on Christmas Day. That was your lot. And you'd get, and I think when I was a kid,
really cut down on the internet discussion of these things when you can only watch them occasionally.
Well, here's the thing, like now, what's the gap between a movie coming out and then being released on DVD is what, like 3 months?
Yeah.
And then within a year, it's on basic cable.
Right.
I think when I was a kid, it was like 7 years before from a film being in the cinema until it would appear on TV.
Which luckily, then time stood still, so it never seemed dated.
So anyway, back in England when I was a kid, Boxing Day is the day after Christmas. And every evening on Boxing Day, the two major TV stations, the BBC and ITV, which was the independent station, would go against each other in the ratings.
Ooh.
They would always play like a blockbuster movie. So not a Christmas movie, not a... I remember one year in the house, there was a big argument because my mom wanted to watch The French Connection, which was on one channel, and half of us wanted to watch The Day of the Jackal, which was on the other channel, at exactly the same time. So you had to choose between big budget action thrillers. And Boxing Day was always, I think, like, you know, The Great Escape, That's your Boxing Day movie. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Magnificent Seven, I think I originally saw that on Boxing Day, when you're all in, everything's shot
again.
Remind
me again why it's Boxing Day.
I actually don't know what the tradition is.
From boxing up dinners because like
the servants. And then giving them to the servants, yeah.
Well, no, the servants were off.
Servants giving it to you.
So
something to do with servants.
You had a box dinner,
yeah.
Because they weren't going to prepare you alive.
That's right, because they'd worked the day before.
Yeah.
Go and watch Downton Abbey. That'll explain
it to you.
That's
right. That's where I think I got it from.
Anyway, one of my favorite Boxing Day movies came out in 1968, which meant it didn't appear on TV until like 1976 or something, is Where Eagles Dare.
Should I just play?
Go ahead and play the trailer, please. And as you get the trailer lined up, Where Eagles Dare, starring Richard Burton and Clint Eastwood.
Mm-hmm. Here he is at the Schloss Adler. Castle of the Eagles. Believe me, it's well known. Because only an eagle can get to it. Our job is to get inside there and get him out as soon as possible.
Major Dakota, my adjutant.
Bring on, go!
Paratroopers coming out of the plane.
Yeah, taking on some Nazis. Allies versus the Nazis.
They're wearing those cool snow uniforms.
Yes. Well, they're white.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like those things appeared more often in movies than the past. Allow me to introduce myself. Probably because it's cheap to get make a white
uniform. Major Johann Schmidt, SS Military Intelligence, Stuttgart. Richard Burton.
Richard Burton.
Take your clothes off.
Oh.
Don't take your clothes off.
Don't worry, you don't get any of that.
Is it right, man?
No.
Now, with McPherson dead, there's only five of us left. So either let me know what's going on, or there's only going to be four.
Clint can fight the Nazi, I understand.
No, Clint is an American disguised as a Nazi. And while Richard Burton, classically trained actor, can probably do enough with his voice to make him...
And Clint Eastwood.
To make him blend in with the Nazis that they are attempting to impersonate.
Drop that gun and sit down.
Clint Eastwood makes absolutely no effort and sounds like Clint Eastwood in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah. Was this a British made movie, I assume?
Yes. I remember. All right, so turn that down.
One of the first movies I ever saw was The Eagle Has Landed, but that's not Where Eagles Dare.
A bit later. But both from novels, and I'm going to talk about that because what I've just said is actually incorrect. This is classic boys' own stuff. And what I mean by that is, you know, there was that line there in the trailer where he tells the lady to take her clothes off. Believe you, there's no taking your clothes off. It's all people shooting the Germans and a little bit of blood and lots of explosions and stunts. Here's some trivia that if you've watched Turner Classic Movies, you will have heard someone else say, this was the last time Clint Eastwood was second fiddle to anyone. Richard Burton was the lead. And Richard Burton called him up and said, I'm the lead in this movie, I want you to come along. And Clint Eastwood was like, what the hell, I'll have a good time. And he did. And they went and they hung out and they filmed in Germany, or I think in Switzerland, anywhere near the Alps, one of these countries, had a fine old time. The thing is based on Alistair MacLean, who'd written a load of books at that time, Guns of Navarone, which was turned into a great movie, HMS Ulysses, which is a wonderful, terrific book about a battleship in the North Sea that was never turned into a movie, loads of other stuff. He was commissioned by the studio to write a screenplay. And he was like, I'd never written a screenplay before. And they were like, just write it like you write one. We love your novels, action, adventure. Just imagine you're writing your novel and we'll take it from there. So he wrote the screenplay first, which they turned into a movie. And then later on, he then turned his own screenplay into a book that was released around the same time as the movie. But unlike a James Bond film or something else, the movie came first, but it's all his story.
Right.
And basically, yeah, it's a war movie, but what I kind of like about it is it feels like it's a special mission movie, and these guys are going to infiltrate to rescue some colonel who's been shut down from the Nazis. But as it unfolds, in classic Alistair MacLean thriller fashion, it's quite a lot of twists and turns. And it's not quite as straightforward as, like in Guns of Navarone, they have to go and blow up the guns. Star-studded cast. You know, not all of them make it. Some of them do. They take on the Germans. They blow up the guns, save the ships. Spoiler. This one's slightly different in that it's all about their commandos that are all like kind of spies as well. So there's a lot of there's elements of people getting bumped off and you don't know who the killer is. And then you don't know if you can trust the Germans. And then is there a good German? And is there a bad, ally? All very exciting. And again, Clint Eastwood's like, yeah, forget this with the accent. I'm just gonna do my own accent and kill lots of Germans. Very exciting, big climax finish, fights on a cable car, lots of shootouts, about 2.5 hours long. If this movie is ever on TV, I sit and watch it till the end, because it's also got a great ending as well.
All right, then.
I'm selling you. On, again, people go, oh, you know, but modern action movies, I mean this sincerely now, modern action movies have great special effects and great stunts and all that kind of thing, yet you sometimes watch some of those old movies from the 60s and 70s. If you have a good story, like, I'm going to give you an example. Have you ever seen the Taking of Pelham 123 with Denzel Washington?
Mm-hmm.
That's an entertaining movie. It's John Travolta doing his thing. Lots of stunts, fancy camera work. I don't think it's as exciting as the original Taking of Pelham 123 from 1974 with Robert Shaw and Walter Matthau.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like, so what I'm saying, this is one of those old-fashioned action movies that actually has a story that you have to follow what's going along. And so therefore, when stuff starts blowing up, I don't know, it kind of makes sense.
Everybody under age 50 has turned off the podcast.
Why? It's a movie classic.
But, like, do you watch it at Christmas?
I first saw it at Christmas on TV.
But you don't watch it now? Like, it does,
what, no, I'll watch, I'll watch it anytime it's on.
Have now. All right, what else we got going with this when we invite people over not to watch?
I'm going to come to the song. No, let's do the song first, because the song is kind of interesting.
You technically have two links to songs here, but I think I know which one you wanted. So
I was here's the thing. Before you play that, so obviously the conceit of this show is you've got to pick a song, and I was going to pick Edelweiss to go with it, because Edelweiss is, you know, Nazi sounding music, kind of Christmassy. Mm-hmm. There you go. There's your Christmas angle. But then I discovered by searching around the internet, well, play this song. This is your Christmas song to go with. Yeah, and I picked this just for you.
Is this Trans-Siberian Orchestra too?
No. I'm going to tell you this is in a minute, but I want you to rock out, because this is you.
Oh, yeah. No. I was just up, well.
When's he going to start singing?
Not sure.
Start singing.
Sometime soon.
Singing a song called Where Eagles Dare.
I'm not sure how this is going to sound. I'm looking at the sound signal.
You can turn that down. That's Iron Maiden. Lemmy. Isn't Lemmy Iron Maiden?
Who's Motorhead?
That's Bruce Iron Dickinson. Maiden. And I don't know when this song came out. I think it came out. I think they probably did it.
It's a relatively older album, Peace of Mind. Actually, maybe I'm going to say it was like 85, I think.
All right, so it's a song inspired by the 1968
I heard him mentioning a blizzard.
So I'm going to read the lyrics. So when I discovered that Iron Maiden had done a song, Where Eagles There, I thought it was just one of those things where it's a pretty cool name,
yeah.
Where Eagles There, which actually leads me to a great piece of trivia from the original movie. When Alistair MacLean wrote his novel, or when he wrote the screenplay, he submitted it, and it was called... I've lost it now. It was called Castle of Eagles. And the film producer was like, no, that's a terrible title. It doesn't sound interesting at all. And he renamed it Where Eagles Dare. And Alistair MacLean said, you know, that's an improvement. I'm going to call, when I turn this into a novel, I'm going to call it Where Eagles Dare. And in fact, Clint Eastwood and Richard Burton had a quote where they called it Where Doubles Dare, because they spent all their time having fun while the stunt doubles did all the work, because it was an action movie.
Peace of Mind, anyway, was 1983.
So Iron Maiden wrote a song inspired by the movie because it talks about it snowing outside, the rumbling sound of engines roar in the night,
mm-hmm.
the mission is near, the confident men are waiting to drop from the sky. The blizzard goes on, but they still must fly. No one should go where eagles dare. Bavarian Alps that lay all around. So basically, Iron Maiden of all people was sitting around watching Where Eagles Dare one night, and the dude goes, yeah, we can do a song to that, and produced a song that they stuck in their album. So there you go. So I find that fascinating.
Were they celebrating Christmas at your household or something?
And, who, Iron Maiden?
Yeah, yeah.
Not too much noise.
Yeah.
You can't have all that noise at Christmas. Neighbors complain.
Well, they were been younger at the time. They're probably about the same age.
So there's your song to go Where Eagles Dare. Now here's, I'm going to give you what you should eat with it. And again, you can research this, and depending where you're from in England, it is sort of different. There are so many regional variants.
Okay.
There's a dish called Bubble and Squeak. Now, on Boxing Day, what's the one thing that you have after Christmas? You have leftovers. Same at Thanksgiving. You got leftovers. Now, most of it, thanks to the microwave, most of us just reassemble the same plate from the same day and bung it in the microwave to make it hot. But obviously, back in the day, with leftovers, there wasn't a microwave. So Bubble and Squeak came about from people throwing leftovers into a pan and frying it up. It's where hash browns came from. But imagine having like refried vegetables and refried stuffing and potatoes and all kinds of stuff. My mom used to make it big old heavy pan. She'd just throw in like cabbage and whatever. And maybe she'd add an egg or throw in some fresh sausage or whatever. Mm-hmm. You'd fry it up so it'd be crispy on underneath and hot on top. You could add your tomato ketchup or for me, HP sauce, which I know we've discussed, or Branston pickle, which you brought me back from the United Kingdom.
We're supposed to eat that sometime.
It's basically leftover food cooked up hot the next day and rebadged to something new.
We kill whatever's grown in it since you left it sitting out overnight.
There are versions all over the world, as I've discovered.
Does it have anything on the origin of the name?
Not on the Wikipedia page, but I always presumed the bubble. No, because the food starts to cook and it bubbles and squeaks.
Right.
Yeah. I used to think it was some sort of Cockney rhyming slang for something, but it's not. Like, you can use bubble and squeak as rhyming slang for something else.
Right.
But actually, it's because it, you know, when you fry something on the stovetop, as it heats up in the pan, it's going to pop and boom, whatever. In Belgium, it's called Stompy. In Denmark, Birkersmad. In Germany, Stemmelkort. But apparently, I mean, it's related to hash in this country.
Right.
So is that notion of recooking something, aloo tiki in India?
I'm sure I've recommended this before, but if you get five nice fries,
and then you can
cut those up and make them into a hash brown.
Right, exactly, and it tastes great. In Wales, they just refer to it as a fry-up, which seems very lazy. Like, yeah, come on, try make more of it than that. But I'd serve you bubble and squeak.
More honest.
Because, again, bubble and squeak was what you had on Christmas, on Boxing Day, because you were trying to get rid of leftovers. Plus, depending on your region, the store might not have reopened.
So, technically, this is all
December 26th. I'm serving you bubble and squeak.
Boxing Day themed.
Yep,
event.
Boxing Day.
Okay,
yep.
I just wanted you to tie it all together.
Yes. Well, I have done. It's all about Boxing Day. You'd eat bubble and squeak and sit down and watch the big movie on the TV because there was no picking your movie. You
bubble
were choosing.
Bubble and squeak is a particular time of the day, lunchtime meal.
Well, whenever you're hungry.
All right.
I mean, I'm not one of those. I'm going to say this personally now. When I was a kid, breakfast was limited to certain types of foods. Cereal, toast, eggs, bacon.
Sure.
If you tried to give me, now as an adult, I'll stick a plate of turkey and whatever and eat that for breakfast. Who cares when you're an adult? But when I'm a kid, I'd be like, where are my Frosties?
Yeah.
Where's the bacon and eggs? So
children appreciate consistency.
Yes. Yeah, so bubble and squeak is a lunchtime or an evening dish.
Okay.
And if you come and spend Boxing Day with me, that's when you're getting it. Or to be fair, if you're actually spending Boxing Day with me, that's when I'll show you all the food is and you can cook it up yourself. Because if you're at my house at Boxing Day, I'm not waiting on you. Because I'm sitting down getting ready for the big movie. Where Eagles Dare.
All right.
Richard Burton, Clint Eastwood.
I suddenly have a fear I mistakenly closed one of my tabs, but I'll have to adapt from there.
Do you need me to spin more yarns about
Bubble and Squeak? I think that's enough.
Okay. All right, so that's my first of my two in the second part.
All right, my package is, I'm calling it Surreal and Sweet, or Sweetly Surreal. It's a Sweetly Surreal Christmas. So we're going to start, well, again, we've been starting with the movies, even though the movie is usually probably the last step of your surreal Christmas.
Then do it the other way, then. Do it the way that God intended.
All right, well, while we're preparing dinner, then.
Okay.
we're gonna or the food we're gonna eat. We're gonna listen to some music, and for that, I will just play it, and we will work from there.
Now, this is just Christmas time, because I've been specific about Boxing Day. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this song I had not traditionally heard as the set until a few years ago, and okay. It like revived or something like.
So how old is this song? Because I was actually going to make a comment. This is what this
it was. It was number 24 in the Billboard charts in December of 1953.
Okay, that makes sense. But it's weird. It's one of those songs, before you go on, that if it had been written in 1934, it would have worked. And right. If someone brings it out in 1980 as sort of slightly retro hipster, you're going to go, yeah, that works. So I'm curious to know when it actually was produced.
So the singer was Gayla Peavy,
okay,
who was 10 years old. So you could think of this, like I always thought this, was somebody imitating a young voice, but she's actually 10. I mean, she's actually quite good for a comedic song kind of delivery for a 10-year-old.
I'm about to say, I think that Wikipedia entry is incorrect, because she can't be 10. She sounds like someone older.
Right.
Yeah. Teacher says a hippo is a vegetarian. I mean, she frankly sounds more like Loretta Lynn on Laughing Gas before anything else, and Loretta Lynn was 10 years of age.
Written by a guy named John Rocks.
Only because we watched The Coal Miner's Daughter yesterday.
I kind of like it, actually. So, but, like, John Rocks doesn't even have a Wikipedia page, right? Like, there's no link.
So some hack musician.
Like, so he...
Not even, like, a band leader or anything like that.
Yeah. So she was a child star who was born in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, before her family moved to out of some other place in Oklahoma. And then, she apparently was filmed on the Ed Sullivan Show. She has a website. I think she passed away relatively recently.
Well, yeah. I mean, she was 10 then, so she couldn't be that old now.
1950. Yeah, right.
Right.
So, but when she had a website that was just, I want a hippopotamus for Christmas, because she didn't do any more. She apparently,
I was going to ask, did she do anything
when
else?
When she was in like her 16, 18 range, she did a song or two under a new name, but it wasn't really, ended up being her long-term career. But
what did she go on to do? Other than dine out on the royalties of one song.
I don't know, but like that's, you go to the website and it's a website for this thing, and it has supposed to have a clip of the Ed Sullivan Show with her singing on it.
Probably she became an egg donor for Michael Jackson. And if you don't get that reference,
like,
you need to
listen to Paul. There's some speculation that it was supposed to be for the Oklahoma Zoo and like encouraging hippopotamus, but apparently that's not the case. They did do some things in retrospect where they used that as a popularity type of item. In any event, it just became a very fun song for myself and the families to listen to.
I'm with you on that. I do get tired of, and again, it's interesting how, you know, we have selected music, and yeah, obviously I've selected music that's not Christmas music because I haven't picked traditional Christmas movies in that sense. But it is interesting. I don't know if you do this, but you know, when I'm driving my stepkids around, everyone wants to turn the channel to the channel that's playing nothing to Christmas music,
right?
And it drives me nuts. Not because I find Christmas music relatively uninspiring. Like, it all seems like someone's slumming it, and I don't want to suddenly sit here and put the boot into Paul McCartney or someone,
right?
But I'm like, whereas something like that feels, and like, you can play that in March and it's not like, oh, turn that off, it's a Christmas song. No, it already has another identity. Do you know what I mean? I mean it. I'm like, I don't like Christmas music because I feel like it's all, yeah, let's just do a Christmas record. And they put some bells in it and stuff. Right. And I'm like, really, is that all you got?
The number of remakes of like class, like, you know, when you throw on, last night we were trimming the tree and we were playing, you know, off of Amazon Music or Spotify or something, their holiday playlist. And I'm like, I don't need another version of Let It Snow or something like that, because they're never going to be better than the one that you remember from your youth kind of thing. So much more interesting to hear something that's a little bit new and funny. And, I, you know, it's kind of funny to think, as a novelty song, which is what it is, obviously, you don't get a lot of, I mean, what's the last one you could think of is like Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer kind of thing, in which, but I mean, nobody would, maybe nobody's ballsy enough to put out a goof song like that, but it's very fun. And I kind of wonder if in the late 50s, in the mid 50s, if you're like, oh, this is insufferable, but now it's because it's 60, 70 years old.
It seems
sort of more innocent and cute. Particularly when you find out the person was actually 10 years old.
And that still amazes me, because she does. When you said, she sounds like someone older doing that voice.
Yep.
Good little song.
Yeah. So I'm going to go to the movie because the food in the middle won't make as much sense.
Okay.
So my sweetly surreal movie is Elf.
Okay.
Which we've spoken about before. 2003. Of course, the stars people know are Will Ferrell, Zooey Deschanel. It's got James Caan, Mary Steenburgen, Bob Newhart plays Elf's father.
And people who turned down the Family Stone.
That's what it's right. So this one, for people who don't,
because you know something, if you put James Caan in the Family Stone, then you're making it clear we're going to be mean to people.
That's true, right. And he's even mean in this, and it's. I wanted to say sweetly surreal because, you know, the first one's sort of a goof. You know, you would never really get a hippopotamus for Christmas, obviously, but it's funny to think about. But here, the idea that it's this convergence of a real life with the imaginary life of elves. You know, the notion is he comes from the North Pole and he's left Santa's – and he's been a human being who's been in the elf community forever, and he comes back to find his real father in New York City who's a book publisher or something like that. And so it's sweetly surreal in the sense that it's not like surreal like, frightening, but it's like kind of mixing together real life.
Well, it's fish out of water, isn't it?
Fictional. It's things that can't exist with things that really do exist.
I've taken this position forever. There are only three ideas in Hollywood. This is fish out of water. This is the plot of Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
There you go.
couple interesting.
Which actually is an idea. Like an elf cop comes to join the human world at Christmas to track down the person that killed his elf partner.
Yeah,
hippopotamus.
The director of it was Jon Favreau.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So of course he's obviously big in the Marvel movies, but we mentioned him most recently
in The Mandalorian
as the director or writer, I should say. He's not directing all the episodes. The most recent episode of The Mandalorian was directed by Bryce Dallas Howard, but he directed a couple too, but he's really the writer, the main credited writer for all those things. And of course, the Marvel things.
But he
has, in not super duper recent, but past few years, had talked about, let's do an Elf 2. And I think there were two rounds of him saying that and then somebody going to Will Ferrell saying,
version.
I'm not really interested. Well, that's what I'm saying.
The cop elf.
That's what I'm saying. They could do one.
Action movie.
If Will Ferrell's not going to appear in it, maybe Will Ferrell was killed by somebody and another elf has to come.
And Mark Wahlberg returns to avenge the killing of his partner.
To begin with, right?
So then it's Elf, real life, plus then the other guy's movie, all that converged into one.
Yeah, put it all together. Now, we mentioned that the Family Stone did not do that well in Rotten Tomatoes. 83% for Elf on Rotten Tomatoes.
Because it is a war movie.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as I came out of my mouth, I felt like I was sort of damning it with faint praise by saying that. But it is in Christmas movies, ultimately, there is an expectation. I mean, one of the reasons Family Stone probably didn't do well is people weren't ready for a Christmas movie with people not being nice to each other.
Because
you're conditioned at a certain moment.
Well, plus kids can watch Elf. They made Elf into a Broadway play, which I don't think lasted too long, but they did a couple of seasons of it being a Broadway play. Here's the most impressive part about it. Budget, $33 million. Worldwide revenue, $220 million.
Ooh, yes. Hit.
Yeah.
Ding. The bells. And I didn't have the bag. Yeah.
So very, very impressive.
Double up.
Also, it's also sweet in the sense that one of his things is he's like a sugar-craving fiend. One of the ideas is that the elves just only like candy, which I guess kind of fits with the old legends of the elves, sugar gumdrops and, you know.
I didn't know that.
But in any event, that's what makes them like build stuff so fast. So he comes into town.
Really?
He makes this big plate of like syrup covered Fruit Loops or something.
Did you
like
learn
that.
All that from the movie, or did you already know that about elves?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I never really thought about it, but you know, like,
okay,
isn't that,
because this is the first time I've learned something completely.
This is elves in the Santa Claus sense, not elves in the sense
Are there other elves?
Of course there are. There's elves
who?
in Lord of the Rings and all that stuff. Those elves aren't big onto their candy, and they don't make any of the stuff. Okay. They shoot people with arrows.
Completely ruined it for me now.
Well, I'm just saying, there's different elves in the world.
Yeah.
Right? Do you disagree?
But the main elves are the ones that work for Santa. I mean, they're your main elves.
They're most important to us personally.
Yes.
Yeah. So...
Lord of the Rings.
So tying into that surreally sweet thing, okay. I was trying to look for some new twists on foods, and I have two. The first one is maple candied sweet potato donuts with bacon. So they're like they're donuts made with sweet potato.
Okay.
So it's sort of like a Christmas dish.
Okay.
But you know, done as a cake and with maple glaze and bacon on top.
Oh my gosh.
It's kind of like the, didn't we, I don't know, remember, we bought some of the donuts when we went to Astro Donuts.
Yes, but I was about to say, we didn't review the donuts, which needs to be our next, we have cheese and donuts on the line for this summer's review and food show that we'll do sometime in the summer. We will choose between one of those. Very sweet.
Yeah.
Is this a dessert or is actually, this breakfast? Do we remember, you know.
It could be either one. I mean, like this could be Christmas morning breakfast.
I guess. But I mean, you need your best, strongest coffee to go with that. Because I don't think a glass of milk would work with that. That would only accelerate the process if you're heading towards diabetic shock.
That emphasizes the sweet part of surreal. The other version of surreal I have is grilled sweet potato nachos, which basically...
Ooh, what's in those?
I think, you know, the recipe on this was really more complicated than I expected. Like, it's 70 minutes, and I think basically the gist of it is you cut the potatoes to almost be like a chip, and then fry them in a pan and use that as the base for nachos, which have, you know, a bunch of
the usual stuff.
Meat and, you know, corn and pinto beans and queso fresco or whatever the heck it is. And
I live near a local Irish bar, and they have some pretty decent food, and they do their nachos with potato chips. So I'm now going to say to you, so everything else on top is the same.
Like legitimate thin chips or like the
slightly
kind of thick?
Slightly thicker potato chips.
I've seen those before.
Do you, if I say to you, I'm going to buy you a plate of nachos, do you want them traditional style with the nachos or do you want them with potato chips?
Traditional.
Interesting, because I've grown rather fond of the potato chip.
Yeah, I'm not much of
all the toppings exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's just the crunch is a different product.
It's tough to keep those chips, the potato chips.
But they are thicker cut, so right, they get a little soggy and heavy.
That's my concern.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
There was a thing in the paper recently, I don't think we talked about it, about French fries and the problem of food delivery, that now everybody's anticipating the next wave, and fast food is not going to get your own fast food, but having the fast food brought to you.
Yep.
And a French fry at like a fast food place and
most dies. Of the place, dies on the way out the door.
It's designed to be eaten within something like 10 minutes of it coming out.
Yeah.
And so some food scientists are developing fries that will keep for 45 minutes and stay crisp still, which just involves like different kind of coatings.
This is why fish and chips are successful in England, because they all work with the much thicker cut.
Right.
So the thicker cut chip,
it's not like a
doesn't
crispy. It's
yeah, it doesn't. Spongy. Yeah, it doesn't. Like, it doesn't die in the way that once a French fry goes soft, what's the point?
Well, it's like Five Guy fries are really kind of mushy to begin with.
Yes,
because of the peanut oil and the skins, they still kind of are interesting. But it's not like a McDonald's French fry where it's supposed to be
really crispy. The minute they're delivered to you, you just throw them in the pan for bubble and squeak.
Exactly.
That is the only way to bring them back to
problem
life.
Solved.
So I do like the sound. I really like the sound of your food stuffs there.
Yeah,
I really do. Yeah, and actually, an interesting song.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Are we ready to move on?
I think so.
Okay. I'm now going to go with my traditional Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has heard the discussion before. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Well, you know something? I don't care what your position is on that, because you know something? Die Hard 2 is a Christmas movie.
I didn't realize.
Because it goes right out and says, we're set on New Year's Eve, because how can the same thing happen to the same guy twice? And hopefully Bruce will say it in the trailer. Please play the trailer for Die Hard 2. And I'm going to make the case why this is the best of the Die Hard movies.
Leave the kids with your parents. Order some room service.
You're on, Lieutenant.
I'll see you in about a half an hour, honey.
Oh, yeah, let's see Christmas bells. Did they do it because the first one was like a mini
Christmas
Eve? How far apart were the two movies?
2 years.
Yep, we'll believe.
Go get him.
Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring.
Oh, look, the white uniforms.
Yeah.
The snow uniforms.
See, yeah, just like in where he's little eagle's there.
What's this about?
Oh, just a feeling I have.
Ouch. When you get those feelings, insurance companies start to go bankrupt.
The tower's lost control.
Instrument landing system is down.
Backup systems won't come up. We've got blizzard conditions. Zero visibility.
Attention all controllers. We have a code red.
Fred Dalton Thompson. Yeah.
Panic in the air.
Professional mercenary. You got the world's biggest drug dealer on his way here now. What do you need, a slide rule to figure this out? You get the hell out of my office.
Bunce.
And Bunce, yeah. Dennis France.
And terror on the ground.
Sipowicz.
Who is this?
Who I am is unimportant. What I want is very important. Oh, we are just up to our neck in terrorists again, John.
Also, Robert Patrick and John Leguizamo as villains. With about one line between
Christmas.
You're the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong
that
time.
That guy from
John Amos.
Yeah.
Story of my life.
Motor shows maybe 2 hours. After that, those planes low on fuel aren't going to be certain.
It's supposed to be set at Dulles Airport, but people always make
points. And I'm going to get into that, yeah.
Buy some beer penalties.
Somebody out there. It's for Clay.
Why explain? They're going to run out of fuel in 9 minutes.
What are you going to do?
Whenever I...
Great movie.
Last time.
Snowmobiles.
Rennie Harlan was the director. Brought the same, but a lot of the same sort of the screenplay and production crew came back from the first
one.
What
year was this one out?
1990. I make the case it is the... I like it more than the original, to be fair. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you why I like it more than the original. And I'm not that way about sequels. I think the original Lethal Weapon is better than Lethal Weapon 2. But I think Die Hard 2 is the best because it's unabashed about what it is. It knows that it shouldn't exist. And it just starts up and gets going, but hits all the same notes that you expect to know. And it's a Christmas movie because you're right. How could the same thing happen to the same guy twice at the same time? So plenty of action. Bruce Willis at that moment, he was arguably one of the biggest, you know, he was an action star almost at the level of Stallone and Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. That was when I think they built...
It would count as a good acting one.
Yeah. Relatively. I mean, you know, he's a decent actor. He put all that Bruno nonsense behind him. I think the movie's great. People don't like it. Oh, it's not the original Die Hard, whatever. I like it because it's unabashed what it is. The action is great.
I love the premise of the, changing the runway. Like, I thought that was a just good trick.
Yeah.
Like, because people who don't know, I don't think I've given away a big spoiler, but one of the ways they're going to have this plane crash is somehow they change up the computer so they, when they can't fly, they're flying by instruments.
Flying by instruments.
And the ground is a different level than it really is, and so they're going to fall, they're going to just smash into the ground when they go to land. That's kind of a neat little idea for something.
Based on a book written by a guy called Walter Wager, an airport thriller guy, an airport paperback guy called 58 Minutes. And it was a script, as most of the diehards seem to be, scripts that are lying around and some executive goes, just turn that into a Die Hard movie. In the same way that Die Hard 3, the one with Jeremy Irons and Samuel L. Jackson, was actually a script based on a book called Simon Says. And they were like, well, let's put Bruce Willis in it and call it a Die Hard movie. And 58 Minutes, the book, which I've actually read, similar plot, the guy's wife's in a plane, but it's set in New York at Kennedy and none of the planes can land. Not as much accent and all that kind of thing, because it's a book. I just think it's done really, really well. There is some trivia with it. It is set in Washington Dulles, and they actually did plan to film there. And Washington Dulles actually had given them permission to film a lot of scenes there. But unfortunately, they were trying to film during the winter in D.C. And in 1989, 1990, there was no snow anywhere. So they had to make a last-minute call and said, sorry, thanks. They took the whole... So all the outside scenes are filmed up in Michigan.
Okay.
And then they ended up going to Denver Airport because that was the only one where they could have scenes through the window where there was snow outside. But they had originally planned to film at Dulles and had asked for permission. And that's why there's that great... if you're one of those like geeky people that watches films and sits there and goes, that's not correct. Right. That wouldn't be right. There's that scene early in the film that's in the trailer where he picks up the phone to call his wife on the plane and the phone says Pacific Bell on it.
Right.
Like Pacific. No. It's a different bell here in
now, from for children.
East Coast.
Just so you know, once upon a time, there was a phone company They called it Mob, but there was really phone, AT&T, yeah. And they had and then they were broken up into regional phone companies because it was a monopoly, and Pacific Bell was one of them.
I do like it. Like I said, I think the action's good. He's at his best, and it handles the ridiculousness of the scenario. Like, they easily could have done this film. They could have done this film any other time of the year and just called it Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
But they consciously go, let's make it Christmas Eve again.
So the one with him running around with, is 3 with,
with Samuel L. Jackson's 3, yeah. And that's set in the summer.
Like, I, it was just too...
all over the place.
Like, cut by number, like, oh, we're going to make them go through adventures where he has to do different things, whereas this was more like, here's how something might actually play out.
And it's funny, Spike S. Cameron, who was on part 1, he and I were both very excited to go and see Die Hard 3 in the cinema. And we went, and I remember saying at the time, wow, I've never been so, I was so underwhelmed by it, yeah. Because I'd love Die, not like everyone, I love the original Die Hard, and I love Die Hard 2. Because like I say, it's a sequel, it's unabashed, let's go, let's do it, we're doing the same thing again, but somewhere else. It's the reason I don't like Lethal Weapon 2, because it tries to be different.
Right.
You know, but it's not. Yeah. And it's so therefore at that moment, it is a Christmas movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Because Dennis Franz's last line is, Merry Christmas, everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What else we got?
Oh, so to eat. No, for a song, let's go with a song first. Mm-hmm. And I actually did struggle with food for this one, and I'm going to... So I did... I only picked a food so we could perhaps have a discussion about that food stuff. The first two Die Hard movies both finished with Let It Snow. Yeah, the first one does as well.
Like over the credits? Or yep. Just
both one, and then the second one too. Camera pulls back, they see all the planes sitting there, and this place. And this is Dean Martin.
This is the Dean Martin.
Yeah, this is the Dean.
This is probably.
Is this the original though? Now, we've had this discussion before about that other song that I always think is Dean Martin, but it's not. It's the duet that we've discussed before. But this is Dean Martin, and this is the one that they use in both movies. So again, people who challenge, how can the Die Hards be a Christmas movie? They're set at Christmas. They have themes about family and people saving their family and being together as family. They have Christmas songs at the end of them. In Die Hard 2, the terrorists hide their guns in Christmas wrap presents.
Mm-hmm.
How can this not be a Christmas movie?
I think it is not the original. I see a Vaughn Monroe version from 1945, and this version was 59. Bing Crosby in 62. Buble in 2003.
I think it is the Dean Martin song that they use in the movie. Sure. It could have been the Bing Crosby one, which makes it even more my case.
Yeah.
Because Dean Martin, he's like a drunk relative at Christmas. Bing Crosby, he's a wholesome relative at Christmas.
Right.
There you go. So
it's more classic. Yeah. I think this would be. Yeah. I think it'd be
Dean Martin's drinking all your liquor and stumbling around the house. We don't need that at Christmas. I've got enough as it is with the dog and the presents. No one's got batteries. But yeah, Die Hard 2, Christmas movie. And to be fair, every couple of years, I own the movie on DVD.
Oh, wait a minute. Here's a problem. We have Die Hard version. Vaughn, let it.
Oh, no. So, Vaughn, so I completely misspoke.
Let's see if this is true.
I don't know, Vaughn Monroe. But if he's not a drinker, then he can come over at Christmas and he's just as wholesome. Drink.
They're all drinkers.
Yeah.
Now we have to pre-roll an ad.
But I myself, on Christmas Eve, when other people are bailing out and going to mass and doing whatever, I will. No, that's the version. That's definitely the version from the original Die Hard. And you have your Iron Maiden song playing as well. So we have an Iron Maiden Vaughn Monroe remix.
Multiple apps.
I always attempt to find a couple of hours on Christmas Eve when the house is empty, and I will reach for like a guy's movie for me to sit and watch with the dog. Some years it's like Bullet with Steve McQueen, but every couple of years I'm like, time for some Die Hard 2. And even though you know everything that's going to happen, you can sing along and you can say all the lines. That's a Christmas movie.
Yeah, I like the fact that we did some successful research on the fly. Usually this doesn't work out that well.
I had no idea what to eat with this, because there's absolutely nothing in the movie, I think, that references food. So I decided, well, this is a classic popcorn movie. Are you a salted popcorn guy or a caramel popcorn guy? Because one of those things that always shows up at Christmas at work. If you're in a workplace where other businesses are given gifts, people give you those nice big cans of popcorn.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they also have that third row, the cheese row. Have you ever had one of those cans that comes where it's regular caramel and cheese? It's always interesting to see.
Who goes for what?
And which goes first?
Well, the caramel and cheese go before the regular. Sure. Nobody wants the regular out of the tin. It's kind of boring.
All right, so are you a cheese, caramel, or regular popcorn
for Christmas time?
Anytime.
Oh, well, regular time, I'd probably go regular popcorn. Well, if it's fresh made. If I had the can, I would go for the other ones first.
Because I was in an AMC the other week, and they actually now sell. They do caramel, and they do mix and mix popcorn like they've...
Right.
Like it's there in the container. I don't know if it's just come out of bags, but it's there in the container. So I don't know.
But holidays, I definitely would go with the caramel.
I've grown to like the cheese popcorn.
The cheese gets on your fingers and stuff.
I know. And it's every weekend, you've got to lick your hands and go keep washing your hands. Because I get very angry when my mother, bless her, comes over. And if I've been given one of those cans, and as soon as it pops open, I can see that she's only doing one. And I will yell, and I will go try and eat some of everything. Because I don't want to have all the good flavors go before I get a hold of them.
All right.
I get very defensive about that.
I'm trying to think if I could think of any other foods that would be.
My stepdaughter does the same thing as well. She keeps eating the good stuff. I'm like, no, dude, eat some of the other stuff as well. That's how it works. See, when I was a kid in England, the cinema, you couldn't get regular popcorn. It was all bags of caramel popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
So regular popcorn in the cinema in England is only a last 30
nowadays,
years.
Nowadays, really better than all those is kettle corn. There's a little bit of sugariness, the light sugary coating to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know. Oh, I need to try that. Yeah.
The problem is you didn't really establish a theme with your song. So there's
it's a song from the movie.
But that's not a theme. That's just like direct. Like, in other
because
words,
if you made a connection,
I could extrapolate it out to food. But because it's just a song from the movie.
But my whole case with this movie is I'm making the case for it being a Christmas movie. People always blow off and go, it's not a Christmas. It's not a Christmas. Thank you for the movie. But it is a Christmas movie.
Okay. I mean, you're not going to get an argument
I use the song. I'm just throwing evidence.
But you didn't create a package.
This is like the impeachment hearing. I'm just throwing witnesses out there to just try and bombard you.
Overwhelm me with distractions. All right, anything else about that?
No.
All right, then we'll get on to our last one, which is mine, and I'm calling it A New Twist on Christmas.
Okay.
So the movie is going to be Scrooged, 1988, the idea being it's taking something that was a Christmas thing beforehand but giving it a new modernized twist.
We began with Dickens. We will end with Dickens.
Exactly.
There you go.
So
they're very literate Christmas.
Pull up a clip.
Here at the New Basement Studios.
Well, we can talk over it.
Is that Bill Murray, obviously? Is it Bobcat Goldthwait?
Yep.
Is he in it? That's right.
Bobcat Goldthwait.
Who is the other comedian that I always think is an old, that Bobcat Goldthwait was a younger? Sam Kinison.
Go Sam Kinison. Bobcat Goldthwait was sort of a lighter version of
yes.
that.
Just the yelling.
Didn't end up dead. Carol Kane, Alfre Woodard, who's the woman?
Karen Allen.
Yes. Let's see what clip. This is an advertisement. So, for this one, the trailers are not very interesting. You just have to get little pieces. I might have two clips for this one because it's just got all these bits and pieces. I really wanted the clip where Bobcat Goldthwait shoots out the turret.
Come on out and play with me.
This is Carol Kane playing the ghost of Christmas present. Yes, Christmas past is Johansson Buster Poindexter.
Yes.
What the heck his real name is. And then the ghost of Christmas.
David Johansson, actually, isn't it?
Yeah. The ghost of Christmas future is just a weird skeleton.
It's a special effect, yes.
Oh, I'm so relieved it's been so long.
Now, apparently, like, he got materially injured in the course of these scenes.
Oh, really?
Like she's beat him up and apparently like cut his lip and
I had a funny feeling. Why did you do that?
Sometimes you have to slap them in the face just to get their attention.
Fine. Slap me in the face. But you
kicked me in the ball.
That's right. It's time to begin your journey. Now, close your eyes and think.
No. You close your eyes.
Oh, no.
I'm through.
Don't be quarrelsome. Close your eyes and think.
Anyway, ton of fun, you know, the whole thing, playing the executive and involved in this stuff. It was directed by Richard Donner, who did Superman and
Lethal Weapon.
I was going to say, because when you mentioned Lethal Weapon just before, I was like, I'm going to tie this thing in right here.
Right.
Written by Mitchell Glazer and Michael O'Donohue. Michael O'Donohue was a Saturday Night Live writer, and they had a relationship with Bill Murray. I think Mitch Glazer is the one who married Kelly Lynch and said that Bill Murray would call him up every time she was appearing in on the repeats in that movie with the dancing guy playing the bass.
Roadhouse. Yeah, like, another good action movie.
Hey, you're right. Really up there getting involved with
I want to say this about Scrooge. I want to make a point about Bill Murray, who we've discussed a lot on this show, and we are both big fans of Bill Murray, but I still tend to take the position that Bill Murray is a not an acquired taste is the wrong word, but I still think that if you put him in front of a very sort of square audience, sort of people that might be over your house at Christmas, they're going to go, oh, that guy, yeah, I don't like him type thing. And the greatest thing about this movie is that you can roll it out there in front of everyone, and people who don't really like that guy, I don't know, he never takes anything seriously, still watch it because it's a traditional Christmas movie. And then the hipsters can sit there and go, yep, I've got a dose of Bill Murray at Christmas. And that is one of the good things about the movie, is it's able. I think for the longest time, until he got older, Bill Murray struggled to find the right vehicle for him, in the same way that John Belushi, they always struggle to find the right vehicle for him.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Well,
and Scrooge is one of those. I take it, like, you know, when I watch Groundhog Day, I'm like, yeah, it's Groundhog Day. And I don't really feel it's Bill Murray really being as Bill Murray as I want him to be. But Scrooged, within the confines of that story and that sort of film and that audience, you get a bit more of the Bill Murray that the Bill Murray fan might want to get. Do you know what I mean? That's my opinion.
So what's interesting is when you mention that is the movie did not. I don't have a
didn't do great.
No, it made $60 million on $32 million budget, but it didn't necessarily get great reviews. Rotten Tomatoes. I was watching a little clip of Siskel and Ebert is talking about it being sort of more mean spirited, and I think it was in 1988. It was ahead of, like, it's very it's very comfortable and comedic now. Time it was considered too, like, crazy or something like
it's
that.
It's a bit too edgy, isn't it?
And I think because
it's not Christmassy enough.
People didn't know, like, Bill Murray, he had done Ghostbusters. It'd been 4 years since then, and he hadn't really done anything else. I think Groundhog Day's after this for sure.
Yes.
Right. So I think at that time it was people would not really know him. Now when you get Bill Murray, you know what to expect.
Yeah, and that's true.
And he was much louder, and apparently he did not like making this movie. Says the director really pushed him to be sort of over the top, and he didn't necessarily
really
quite as over the top there in this stuff. And so, I mean, who knows? It's all the same information appearing everywhere. You know, I realize now I somehow managed to skip playing a clip for Elf, but maybe we'll go out with that.
The exit clip.
It's
are you a Bill Murray then or a Bill Murray now guy?
Both.
With what we just both.
Yeah.
See, I'm very much a Bill Murray now guy. Like, and what I mean by that is, like, I love all his stuff with Wes Anderson. Whether he's in those films or he's done a voiceover or whatever it may be, I love Bill Murray now. You know, like everyone, he's still got jobs. Lost in Translation, he should have won the Oscar that year. Yeah. You know, Broken Flowers' movie, I've shouted out. You know, but I do find some of his earlier work, it's a bit like, you know,
he strikes like his comedy to me. Reason I like both is because his comedy at points seems always age appropriate. Like he's not being Will Ferrell and being like a child all the time. Not that I dislike Will Ferrell, but when he was kind of a younger person, it was more, I'm a little crazy guy.
Yes.
And he's now in this point, he's aged to the point where he's like, I can just do my wry one-liners, bits and pieces, and I can have an honest sincerity to it, but also be sort of charming. And
Because to be fair, whether on purpose or not, he also plays off of
those early perceptions of
right,
him.
Right.
Because you kind of know that
well, exactly. Bill Murray's well, that's like, because it's who he is already. Like, crazy. Kind of comes yeah, along. Yeah, you know, every yeah, time he appears, yeah. they always talk about whenever he appears at golf events or something like that. I mean, everybody's like, oh, what's Bill Murray going to do? Like, he's just going to well, be the cool guy.
Because I always think that was what, that was why he didn't win. I can't remember who won it the year when he had Lost in Translation. But I think that I would imagine for certain Oscar voters, it was, well, that's just Bill being Bill, which is kind of unfair because he really created a character that had some pathos to it. And also, yeah, just because it plays off of your what you think he should be doesn't mean it's not a good acting job.
Right.
Yeah, I still thought a good job that year. I'll still always be angry at the Oscars for that.
Yeah, right. So while we're warming up for the movie, we're gonna have drinks and food at the and drinks and music at the same time.
Okay.
For music, we're gonna be listening to again. We're keeping in mind that it's a theme is the twist on traditional Christmas okay. thing. We're gonna be listening to another one people have heard me talk about before, and everybody knows.
Yes, as always, I don't make the same mistake I always would make. Isn't this Belinda Carlisle?
Yeah, right. No, it's older than that. So this is The Waitresses.
Yeah.
With Christmas Wrapping, W-R-A-P-P-I-N-G. 1981.
Wow. Is it that old?
Which is, like, I thought, like, I had not realized that because, of course, he's as... That's what they're going to basically say. It's like we're almost rapping here, like a rap. It's yes. clearly like, but 1981 is really early to be on a rap trend. Like
no, but it was just after, you know, all the forerunners of rap, like Grandmaster.
Sure, that's
you know.
Really early to yes. turn it into a but white there are band but there are slash couple Christmas
of,
song.
There are a couple of different, like Blondie had a pop doing it. Like it wasn't an unknown thing.
Right. Yeah, Blondie had that.
Had done it, and someone else had done one.
But then to fit into a Christmas song.
I think this is a great Christmas song. I love this. I mean,
it's both a good song, and apparently it was like very much like they whipped it up very quickly. Like they were asked to do a compilation album for their small label that they were on, and the guy, like the main person who wrote it is a guy named Chris, oh, I can't read my handwriting, Butler maybe? The singer is Patty Donahue.
Because who was in The Waitresses, and what else did they do?
They did. The main things were I Know What Boys Like.
Okay, that's
and,
right, yeah.
And
okay.
then the theme to Square Pegs. The sitcom. Which, who did the Square Pegs star? Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh, my God.
Tying it right back into The Family Stone.
We did. We've linked it all the way around, haven't we? This is a great Christmas song in a way that Run DMC's, whatever the Run DMC song from Christmas is go Christmas in... It's Christmas in the Hood or whatever yeah, that one
so,
is.
So, you know, I thought about that. So I was thinking of a new
and
twist.
I love Christmas both
and
of
Hollis
those.
Is what you're
Christmas
saying.
And Hollis because yeah. they're both Christmassy, but they're not... They're both of Christmas without being traditionally Christmassy.
Right.
Because this is a great 1980s new wave... You hear the drum, the guitar, the saxophones going. You know, this could easily be...
You know, I end up choosing this because I thought about that. And the reason I chose this one is because I felt like it had a more of a sense of humor in the way that...
Yeah.
Although Christmas Hollis does have a sense of humor also. Like it's, but it somehow it seemed more of a piece with
as much as dudes in all black and white Adidas can have a sense of humor when they're yelling
yeah,
at
I can't remember. There's a whole bunch of jokes about going to moms and, you know, like... It's,
yeah,
like
yeah.
You know, it's very, like, it's designed to be funny, you know. And so it could equally fit here.
You know, but, well, I want to say that. What they both have in common is songs. Is they talk about your regular dude Christmas
right.
experience. Because
yeah.
our Christmas experience is not, oh, wow, it's snowing right
yeah,
now.
Exactly.
Christmas,
like,
that, which all the other songs kind of do. These talk about how they have a very sort of realistic view of what Christmas yeah. is.
A&P is giving the world's smallest
yes.
turkey. I'm meeting somebody, blah, blah, blah. So little other tidbit. So the Patty and Chris, they met each other at Kent State. Chris was actually, this goes with the fact that it's 1981, how old he was. He was actually in the crowd when they were fired upon in Kent State.
Oh my gosh,
in the whole
yeah,
riots
yeah.
in like 68 or 9 or whatever yeah. it was. And She died at age 40 in 1996 of lung cancer.
Oh, wow.
She's a lifetime smoker, so kids, don't smoke.
Yeah.
Don't vape either.
Yeah. That's creepy. Yes, that bad for you, too.
So at the same time, we're going to have drinks, right? So we got to keep with our theme of drinks. And I have a couple people to shout out here. With our drinks, we want a new twist on Christmas. And so it actually took some effort to try to think of what would be a new twist on Christmas. So okay. I asked some friends who are pretty good at keeping up with cocktails, and they mentioned they're a big fan. This is Rob and Millie down in Charlottesville, who are great friends of me and the podcast. Rob does a lot of traveling. He listens into us. They had a holiday bourbon punch, which is an apple cider, orange sweet tea, four roses bourbon, garnish and stuff like that. But I give them a shout out for providing this. I texted them this morning, said, hey, didn't you have a drink recipe that was holiday stuff? That's, to me, pretty traditional. So I'm not using that as my drink. So I went poking around looking for places that had different alternative drinks. And there was a whole bunch listed. There's this on Bustle website. If you want to look for some unique Christmas drinks, there's a whole list of different things that you could have. Pomegranate, ginger, paloma.
Ooh, that sounds nice. See, I'm not. I don't.
Sparkling cranberry punch. You know, a mulled cider, which is more traditional. A Campari mint spritzer. There's somewhere in here. Well, not a candy cane margarita. Be stir cold. Here it is. A cranberry margarita. I mean, that'd be an interesting kind of thing. But what I chose is because, again, I want those things are not really twist. Those are Christmas twist on drinks. What I wanted is a twist on a Christmas drink.
Ooh, like in the okay.
That. So what I ended up going with is what is called, it's a Chilean holiday punch, which looks a lot like an eggnog, and it's got milk in it in there, but it's this Central or Southern South American drink where like the recipe that appears on the kitchen,
which fresh from the goat.
Like my dad would have devoted a whole Saturday morning to boiling milk with spices, managing to cover the entire kitchen with sugar, coffee, pisco. It's Argentinian pisco drink, which I can't remember what that is, but it's pretty good stuff. And then like kind of brewing it all day. And its real name is Cola de Mono, which is like the tail of the monkey.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, like this, I'm really tempted to see if I can make this. You know, it's got the.
Well, can I say this? I would try that because, in the same way that we had our discussion in episode one about fruitcake, I'm the same way about so much. I'm done with the spice and the cinnamon and all that. I'm at an age where I want something that I can, you know, relate to the festive season that doesn't have all those same flavors that just appear.
Right.
Like when you first said there with the recipe that Robert Millie had given you about the other punch. Yeah, but you know, in a strange way, you know, if you try to throw that in front of someone in May, they're going to go, isn't this a Christmas drink?
Right.
And I'm not suggesting without trying these, I'm not suggesting that's not the case, but I am one of those people now desperately on the hunt for, as I've demonstrated with my three films, Don't just give me something out of the box that says Christmas on it. Give me something else that I'm going to like anyway and tie it into Christmas for me. And that's kind of how I approached.
Yeah, and this one I was surprised because when I saw it at first, it's in a list of recipes at the Bustle, and then they link out to the places they're at. When I saw it in the list, I thought they probably just picked it because it looks like eggnog. Well, it turns out the entire story that goes with it over at the kitchen, and we should link this one.
We will link that on the blog, yes, along with the Wayback Machine.
Is about how this person's father made it when they were back in Chile, and like it was their holiday drink, meaning they made it at the holidays, and how it was like, you know, some of this person, I can't remember if it's a woman or a man, but first sips of drinks were at the Christmas having the Cola de Mono.
I think it's fair to say that our Christmas message to you podcast fans of the show is feel free to give us boxes, but please think outside of the box if we're coming over to your house for Christmas. All right, come on now. Come on.
So my big stretch fear yourselves about making one of these type of drinks where you make a whole bunch of it for everybody.
If it doesn't taste any good, just stop with
like,
it.
Or only I like it. Like, or something, you know, two people like it. But this one with the coffee taste, I think that might sell pretty well.
Yeah, I think so. Because if you tell people, I think with a lot of those things, when you're introducing something like that to people, it's how you sell it to them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Plus, if I make it like a milk related, like,
oh, you have
probably only people having two of them, right?
No, but so it's like, one of those things where you make, and as people come in the door, you don't go, hey, what do you want to drink? You jam that in your hand, exactly. You jam a shot try of that this in their hand, and go, try this. Oh, and we've
if
got
you want
beer
to move on to wine after that.
That's what I'm fine saying. It's like when you go to any kind of reception or something like that, you're going to get what's on the tray. Yeah. So if you make this, Don't worry about being stuck with it. Just force it on people as they either exactly. force it on people as they come in the door, or force it on people as they fall towards the door later, yeah. providing they're not the ones driving. Takeaways, of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else for our 2019 Christmas show?
That's it.
Do you want to cue up an Elf clip and we'll play that?
Yeah. It may not really be a play out type of clip, but just because I have it here, I feel like I
thank you. To. Merry Christmas to all our fans. Thank you to Spike Guest Cameron. Pieces of Grit. Your gift is on its way.
This is when Buddy the Elf, Santa Claus, comes to the department store.
Who the heck are you?
And he realizes it's not really Santa Claus.
No, you're not.
Why, of course I am.
You're Santa. What song did I sing for you on your birthday this year?
Happy birthday, of course. how old are you, son?
Four.
You're a big boy. What's your name?
Paul.
And what can I get you for Christmas?
Don't tell him what you want. He's a liar.
Let the kid talk.
You disgust me. How can you live with yourself?
Just cool it, Zippy.
You sit on a throne of lies.
Look, I'm not kidding.
You're a fake.
I'm a fake?
Yes.
How'd you like to be dead?
Huh? Who is that playing Santa Claus?
It's Artie Lang.
It's Artie Lang. That's right.
Stink.
I think you're going to have a good Christmas, all right?
You smell like beef and cheese. You don't smell like Santa.
Okay, go.
The beard off.
All right, we'll let this play on. This has been the 2019 Christmas special. We'll see you in the new year with our resolution show. Yeah. This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.